This program comes to you by electrical transcription. The Treasury Star Parade. With Miss Jane Cowell and several citizens from the Great March of the Essex Coast of England, with Al Goodman and his orchestra and chorus, and Frederick March as our master of ceremonies. Our slogan,
Millions for Defense.
Frederick March, ladies and gentlemen, in another of the new series of programs brought to you by the Treasury Department. To all those whose watchword is service, whose devotion is true and unconscious of self, we dedicate this beautiful story of Paul Gallico's, The Snow Goose, as read by Miss Jane Cowell, with the musical background by Ralph Wilkinson.
The Great Marsh lies on the Essex coast between the village of Chelmbury and the ancient Saxon fishing hamlet of Wickledrop. It's one of the last wild places of England, desolate, utterly lonely, and made lonelier by the calls and cries of the wildfowl that make their homes in the marshlands and saltings. In the late spring of 1930, young Philip Ryader came to live at the abandoned lighthouse by the old sea wall. He was a painter of birds, and nature, who for reason had withdrawn from all human society. For he was a hunchback, and his left arm was crippled, thin and bent at the wrist like the claw of a bird. And he'd found this a world in which he could not take part as other men. He was a friend to all things wild, and all things wild repaid him with their friendship. Each fall, the wild geese would come swinging down the coast from Iceland and Spitsbergen in great skeins that darkened the sky and filled the air with the rushing noise of their passage, barking and whooping and honking in the autumn sky, to circle the landmark of the old light and drop to earth nearby to be his guests again, birds that he well remembered and recognized from the previous year. This made Ryder happy. And he didn't seem to mind so much that the natives looked askance at his misshapen body and dark visage, marked him off as that queer chap that lives down to the lighthouse. But one November afternoon, 3 years after Ryder had come to the Great Marsh, a child approached the lighthouse studio by means of the sea wall. In her arms, she carried a burden. She was no more than 12, slender, dirty, nervous, and timid as a bird, but beneath the grime, as eerily beautiful as a marsh fairy. She was desperately frightened of the ugly man she'd come to see, but greater than her fear was the legend that this ogre who lived in the lighthouse had magic that could heal injured things. For in her arms was a large white bird, and it was quite still. There were stains of blood on its whiteness and on her kirtle where she held it to her.
"What is it, child?"
The voice she heard was deep and kind. The bird fluttered as she placed it in his arms.
"I found it, sir. It hurt it. I found it at a marsh where hunters had been. Can you heal it, sir?"
"Yes. Yes, we will try. Come, you shall help me."
There were scissors and bandages and splints on a shelf, and he was marvelously deft. The child watched, fascinated. He bandaged the wing close to the body and made a splint for the shattered leg.
What is it, sir?"
"It's a snow goose from Canada. Terrible storms must have driven her far off her course. I've never seen one here before. We will call her the Lost Princess. In a few days, she'll be feeling much better. See."
He reached into his pocket and produced a handful of grain. The snow goose nibbled at it. The child laughed with delight and then suddenly caught her breath with alarm as the full import of where she was pressed in upon her. And without a word, she turned and fled out of the door.
"Wait, wait!"
he called. The girl was already fleeing down the seawall, but she paused at his voice and looked back.
"What is your name, child?"
"Little."
"Where do you live?"
"With the fishing folk at Wickledrop."
"Will you come back tomorrow or next day, see how the princess is getting along?"
She paused, and Ryder thought of the wild water birds caught motionless in that split second of alarm before they took their flight. But her thin voice came back to him, and then she was gone, with her fair hair streaming out behind her. The goose mended rapidly, and the child Fritha became a frequent visitor. until one day in June, the Snow Goose with the others answered the strong call of the breeding grounds, climbed into the sky in ever-widening circles, and vanished. With the departure of the Snow Goose ended the visits of Fritha to the lighthouse. And that summer, out of his memory, Ryder painted a picture of a slender, grime-covered child, her fair hair blown by a November storm, who bore in her arms a wounded white bird. But in mid-October, the miracle occurred. Above the sea and tide, he heard a clear, high note, saw a white pinion dream that circled the lighthouse once, then dropped to earth and came waddling forward importantly to be fed. It was the Snow Goose. When next Ryder went to the village, he left a message with the postmistress.
Tell Fritha, who lives with the fisherfolk at Wickledroth, that the lost princess has returned.
And so time passed. Each spring the Snow Goose would disappear, and with it Fritha. In the fall they would both return. Until one spring Ryder realized with a shock that she was no longer a child. Standing shoulder to shoulder on the seawall, their glowing eyes watched the departing geese form their flight tracery. And suddenly...
Look, Philip! Look!
Ryder followed her eyes. The Snow Goose had taken flight. Her giant wings spread, but she was flying low. Once, twice, she circled the lighthouse, then dropped to earth again in the enclosure and commenced to feed.
She be and going, Philip. The princess be going to stay.
I shall stay. She will never go away again. This is her home now, of her own free will.
And Fritha was suddenly conscious of the fact that she was frightened. And the things that frightened her were in Ryder's eyes. The longing and the loneliness and the deep, welling, unspoken things that he could not speak because of what he felt himself to be, misshapen and grotesque. And the woman in her counseled flight from something she was not yet capable of understanding. It was more than 3 weeks before she returned to the lighthouse. She came back, she told herself, only to see the snowbird. But she found Philip loading supplies into his little sailboat, which she'd often seen him handle with such skill. And a great fear, she knew not why, came into her heart.
Philip, you'd be going away.
The Snow Goose was forgotten. Words came tumbling from Ryder now. He must go to Dunkirk, 100 miles across the channel. A British army was trapped there on the sands, awaiting destruction at the hands of the advancing Germans. Fritha listened and felt her heart dying within her. He was saying he would sail the channel in his little boat. It could take 6 men at a time. In a pinch, 7.
Philip, must he go? You'll not come back. Why must it be?
I must, my dear. I must. Men are huddled on the beaches like hunted birds, Fritha. Like the wounded and hunted birds we used to find and bring to the sanctuary. And they need help, dear. As our wild creatures have needed help. And this is why I must go. It is something that I can do, Fritha. For once, I can be a man and play my part.
And Fritha stared at Ryder. He no longer seemed ugly or misshapen or grotesque, but very beautiful. Things were turmoiling in her own soul, crying to be said, and she didn't know how to say them.
I'll come with you, Philip.
No, my dear. Your place in the boat would cause a soldier to be left behind, and another. I must go alone. Will you look after the birds until I return, Fritha?
I will. And God speed you, Philip.
Fritha stood on the seawall and watched the sail gliding into the sea. Suddenly, from the darkness behind her, there came a rush of wings, and something swept past her in the air. In the night, she saw the flash of white wings and the thrust forward head of the Snow Goose. It rose and cruised over the lighthouse once, then headed out toward where Ryder's sail was slanting in the gaining breeze, and flew above him in slow, wide circles. Watch over him, Fritha whispered, until she could no longer see them, and they were both swallowed up in the night. Now the story becomes fragmentary. It's been gathered from many sources and from many people. Some of it comes from men who have looked upon strange and violent scenes.
A goose! A blooming goose, so help me!
God!
A goose it was! Doc, you seen it same as me. It came flying down out of the muck and stink and smoke of Dunkirk that was overhead. It was white with black wings, and it circles us like a blooming dive bomber.
We was roasting on the beach between Dunkirk and La Panny, and offshore is the Kentish Maid, a ruddy excursion scow waiting to take us off. And out of the smoke comes this blooming goose, circling round us, trapped on the beach. A blooming omen, I says. And then he comes.
Who comes?
Him that saved the lot of us. Into the shell as he sailed, as cool as you please, in a blooming little sailboat. Through a boiler, machine gun bullets and diving stukas, never giving him no mind, he didn't. Sailing between the shells, right past a burning destroyer. Little dark man with a beard, blooming claw for an hand and an ump on his back. I can take seven at a time, he says.
I can take seven at a time!
And we waited out to where he was. And this goose honking all the time. And him at the tiller looking up and grinning at her like he'd known her a lifetime. Well, he brings us out to the Kentish Maid and turns around and goes back for another load. I don't know how many trips he made, but he brought us all off that particular stretch of hell without the loss of a man. And then he sails back toward Dunkirk and the bird with him. Flying round the boat like a white angel against the smoke.
Flipper had remained alone at the lighthouse, wandering through the storerooms and examining the wonderful paintings within them. Among these, she found the picture that Ryada had painted of her from memory so many years ago when she was still a child. And the things she saw in it stirred her as nothing had ever done before. For much of Ryada's soul had gone into it. She knew that Ryada would not return. And so, when she heard the high-pitched, well-remembered note of the snow goose crying from the heavens, it brought no instant of false hope to her heart. But the sight, the sound, and the solitude surrounding her broke the dam within her and released the surging, overwhelming truth of her love, let it well forth in tears. But the snow goose didn't come to earth this time. It only skimmed low and then soared up again, flew in a wide, graceful spiral around the old lighthouse, and then began to climb. But Fritha didn't see the snow goose. She saw the soul of Ryada, taking farewell of her before departing forever. She stretched her arms up into the sky and stood on tiptoe, crying,
Godspeed! Godspeed.
Thank you, Jane Powell, for a magnificent performance. And you, Paul Gallico, for a beautiful and sensitive story of a man who counted his personal happiness and well-being as nothing in the face of an opportunity to serve his country. And now, one more thing, a most important thing. We in America are at war. We need money to win that war, and that's your job. Buy defense bonds and stamps. Buy them often and regularly. Budget a part of your income every week. Join the Treasury payroll savings plan wherever you work. Defense bonds and stamps are your way of investing in the future of America. Your future. It's your country. Keep it yours.
The United States Treasury Department thanks the distinguished artists who donated their talents to this performance. Miss Jane Cowell for her magnificent interpretation of Paul Gallico's story of the Snow Goose. Mr. Gallico for his use of the material. And Frederick March for playing the part of Ryada. The orchestra and chorus were under the direction of Al Goodman. Writing by Hal Block, John Latouche, and Malcolm Meacham. Production by Willie Mae Bacher. This is Larry Elliott speaking.